Hi, I'm Gary Stewart, and welcome to Staff Notes. I work in the Office of Government and Community Relations at Cornell. I'm also a member of the Employee Assembly. And today we're here in the basement of the Humphrey Service Building in the electric shop, and we're talking to Kathy Luce Herrera, who's an electrician here at Cornell. And Kathy, thanks for being on the show.
We're glad to have you here at the electric shop. I'm glad you got the name right. All over campus, sometimes people call us the electrical shop.
Right.
But we're the electric shop.
Darn it. So you've already been working this morning, yeah?
Yeah, I start at 6.
And where are we at today?
Today I worked in some offices and a conference room over at Martha Van Rensselaer.
So the old Martha Van.
Yes.
Yeah, and what were you doing?
I was up on a ladder doing some relamping and replacing some ballasts and some lamps and some clips for the sockets for the lights.
I think a lot of times people here at Cornell don't appreciate the work you guys do, but it's just this nuts and bolts stuff that keeps the place running and looking good, so we appreciate that.
Well, ideally, you don't even notice us. That's the ideal.
Right. Can you tell us a little about your background and your job here at Cornell?
Sure. I've been at Cornell since 1988. I came here from Texas. I visited for the first time in the spring. Like a lot of people do, I fell in love with the place and wanted to live here. And I came here in 88 and found out about a job here as an apprentice electrician. I had been applying for plumbing jobs. I needed work, and I had gotten responses like, well, you know, if you do plumbing work, you'll have to put your head under a sink and you might get spiders and stuff. And I was just like, gosh, this place. But when I got interviewed by my boss, who's still my boss, Jake Benninger, he was wonderful, and I recognized that this could work out. This could be a home, and it has been for over 20 years now.
So the folks who do like a job like yours, like an electrician, they're unionized, is that right?
The skilled trades up here at Cornell are unionized, and we've got several shops that are all some of them are Cornell employees and some of them are temporary employees, but they're all union.
And so when you came here in 88, you were an apprentice and you had to go through that system. Can you describe that for us?
Sure. For the electricians, it had just changed when I started from a four-year apprenticeship to a five-year apprenticeship. And now it's 120 hours. You can get college credit for it. I think it's 120 hours. And it's a terrific program because they teach you all about motors, phasing, wiring, and you do that at night, but you can work during the day. So I got my work done here in the day, and then I'd go down to the Union Hall. At that time, we had classes at the Union Hall and take classes and tests. And it was great because I had been doing some electrical work, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And a little knowledge is a dangerous thing,
right,
especially with electrical work. So I'm glad I got the apprenticeship. I'm glad I got the job at Cornell. It's been a terrific career. I love it.
How does gender play in within trades? I mean, is there many women doing the work that you do?
Well, that's a huge question. I came from the phone company I worked for in Houston. I worked as an installer and then a repairman. And back then, the federal government had to put a consent decree on the phone company because they were excluding women and minorities from these craft jobs, well-paying craft jobs. And I got in just at the end of that when they had to hire women, and they weren't too happy about hiring a 5'2", 19-year-old gal, but that work was just so exhilarating, and I thought, in 20 years, this is such great work, you know, women will make up 50% of this kind of workforce. And I've been sort of disappointed that there aren't more women in the trades and more women doing these jobs that are good-paying jobs. They're hard, but could it be as hard as raising kids? I don't think so.
Right.
You know, it's hard work, but I think it's work that women are certainly capable of doing, and women have proved it all over the university and all over the country. I think that there's some societal norms that hold women back, and it's not a glass ceiling, but I think Cornell, with the efforts of people like Dave Richardson, who I understand you already spoke to, is taking great strides. And I know during the time that I've been here, we've increased our numbers of women. Not as many as I would like, and certainly not any other Latina women in the skilled trades at Cornell. What is that about? I don't know, but we're working on it. And I think that we may see in the next 10 years or so a huge shift, because young people, I understand, aren't so concerned about gender as people like me and the generations after me have been. So
what's your day like? Do you know where you're going like a week out ahead of time, or do you come to work and they say, Kathy, you need to get over to Stimson, and do you work with a set crew, or do you work by yourself? What's an average day, if there was one, look like?
That's a good question. A lot in the old days, I had a pile of tickets, and I would chew through those, and I would try and allocate my work as best as I could according to the parts that were in, the availability of the room, things like that. Because an auditorium, for example, if classes start at 8 o'clock, I have from 6 to 8 to get in there and do the work, and then, you know, it's got classes all day. Nowadays, we have a much thinner pile of tickets, and pretty much it's like what you said. I come to work and they say, Kathy, we need you over at Stimson, and that's what I do. I do have a crew that we work with most of the time, and so we know each other, and when there's two people needed on a job, we work together, and that's a big help because with time you get to know people's working styles, and it just flows. It's beautiful.
How do you keep up with changes in technology regarding your work? Where's the education component?
That's an excellent point because as a union member, I have access to a joint apprenticeship training committee training through my union, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Just the other day, we had a Saturday training where Jake, my boss, helped us learn some more about fusing and breakers. And the circuit breakers, the technology has changed tremendously just since I started in 20 years ago. But you do have to keep up. Dimming, for example, when I started, basically there was the little rheostat, you know, the round knob for a dimming system. Mm-hmm. Now you got electronic dimming systems. You've seen those ones with all the different buttons on them. They have modes, and they're incredible. In the old days, they were all hardwired and big coil-wound dimmers, and now they're electronic. And in the old days, you could actually file the points on the contacts and clean them off. And now the contacts are electronic, and so you might have to replace a card. It's fun, but the training is constant. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your boss before. Is it Jake Benninger?
Yes.
I like it when people like their boss, think they have a good boss. What makes a good boss from where you sit? Why is Jake an effective supervisor for you?
Well, first of all, I'll talk about his vision. One of the things that's clear from watching Jake over the years is that he had a vision for the electric shop that our workers would be well-trained and would be second to none. And as a result of that vision, he made sure that our apprentice school trains all the electricians, whether temporary or full-time, in the code, in the OSHA 10 training, which is a safety requirement for construction sites, in all sorts of certifications. We have a fire alarm crew. We have people that do card access entry stuff. We have people that do variable speed drives on motors. He sees to it that they have the technical training they need because we got a world-class institution here. You got to have the workers trained for it. And that's something that we hear out in the community a lot from employers is they want the workers to be trained. And I think Jake's had a tremendous vision. Beyond that, he's also supported women really well. He was one of the recipients of the Cook Award, mm-hmm. and I was one of the nominees. There's a few of us women here in the shops and elsewhere on campus that have recognized that through the years, he set the standard for the shops in terms of diversity and inclusion for women. It's a big deal.
What do you do when you're not working? What's your life like outside of work?
Oh, I like to hike. On vacation, I like to go someplace warm and snorkel. I love to read. I hardly get enough time for that. I'm in the employee degree program, and I'm taking classes toward an ILR degree, a BS. I have three classes left, but they've been all sort of put by the wayside. A few years ago, decided to run for elected office, and I ran for the county legislature, and I won. And I've been serving. This is my third 4-year term I just started. So that's fun.
And what district do you represent on the county legislature?
It's District 5. It's mostly Fall Creek, a little bit part going up the hill, like Klein Road, and parts of Cayuga Heights.
And when you're in the county legislature and you're there, it's a very high-profile public body. What are the discussions like when Cornell comes up? Do you ever feel like you're representing the university, or do you feel that you're ever trying to help connect resources at Cornell to maybe the county? Or what's the relationship like between the county and Cornell from where you sit on the county legislature?
It's an interesting question. It's one that I grappled with at first, and then I realized it comes really naturally, because when I'm on the county legislature, I'm representing the taxpayers. And so it's like a good of the whole kind of a thing. There's times when I've spoken out about things that I thought were really important that Cornell needed to pay attention to that would be best for the whole of the county. And there's times when I've advocated at the county level for things that Cornell was doing because I thought it would be good for the whole of the county. So that's what it all comes back to. Mm-hmm. I remember Barbara Mink, who used to serve in this role. I talked to her a few times when I was thinking about running, and I kept asking her, what do you do when the needs of your district are different than the needs of the county? And she goes, well, it doesn't work like that. And I asked her seven or eight different ways. I kept asking her, like, how do you do it when these two things are at odds? And she kept saying, well, the good of the county, you know, serves the good of Fall Creek, and Fall Creek, what's good for Fall Creek, serves the good of the county. There's not a diametric opposition like that. And I thought on that, and as I've served longer, I've come to understand that that's really true, that it's a vision thing. Mm-hmm. It's when you have, you know, the picture of what's good for the whole, it's easier to navigate these situations and to recognize where's the right way to go.
You seem like you really kind of, like your job itself, you seem like you like being on the county legislature. It's not a burden. It's not like poor me. It's like that it's a privilege and in some sense a responsibility, yeah?
Well, yeah, all those things. I mean, part of me says I was bred for this because in my family we were all told you have to do public service. You, if you're part of a community, you contribute to it. And also, I grew up in a time period when elected office wasn't seen as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It was a way that people did their public service. And so I've carried that forward, understanding that, you know, everybody has what they can contribute, and this is something I'm willing to do. I was a union rep for a while, and I enjoyed that. There's a way the talking to people and listening to people and getting in between people in these situations and hearing what's going on, I love that stuff. And in terms of representation, you know, that's consistent with union philosophy. It's consistent with big D democracy, little D democracy. It's consistent, you know. So it's a wonderful way to be able to live my values and...
Wonderful.
It's fun.
A lot of times people just feel so beleaguered, so overwhelmed, so busy. I think everyone's busy, but what do you say to the person to try to encourage them to get more involved in the public sector, be it volunteerism or an elected position or just being on a board or a committee? What do you say to say, look, I know you're busy, but this is why it's important?
I think the secret, and this is what I talk to people about in the community when they just retired and they're looking for something to do, find something that gets your juices going. Find something that you're excited about, whether it's a personal interest you have or whether it's something you're really intrigued about or curious about. You need that personal connection, and if you can get that, then all the rest of it follows from there. But the busyness, I have a comment about that. I was reading an article in the Newsweek, and it was talking about this new model for business, and it says that workaholics are just masochists that are going to take too long to get anything done anyway. You need to go with somebody that wants to have a good time, that is going to try to, you know, get through what they're doing because they enjoy it, or find a way to enjoy it. And I like that model a lot better than, oh, gee, we have to do this, you know.
Right, right.
I think it makes the day go faster. I have a coworker, Earl Evans, that I worked with years ago as an apprentice. And I loved working with Eric because he'd tell stories and we'd joke around during the day. And before you know it, it's lunchtime. And then you work a little bit more. And before you know it, it's time to go home. It's like, I want to come back tomorrow and find out the rest of the story.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the way you can, it's your life.
Right.
Might as well be here.
So we have one final question that we always wrap up our show with. And that is, if you were president of Cornell for a day, what would you do with your time?
I love that question because it brings to mind that show that's on TV about Undercover Boss. And you saw the front, I'm sure, the April...
The flaw print.
That was so funny and so popular. I kind of think along those lines, that if I was President Scorton for a day, I would do some of the line activities around campus. Of course, it's hard to do that in a low profile, but just to get an idea of what it's like and to have people see you doing those things. Because like my dad used to say, you know, every job has dignity, and you know, any job that's worth doing is worth doing well. They're cliches, but I think Skorton understands those things. I think our president, based on what I've seen of him and the times I've talked to him, he has a tremendous understanding of the dignity of work, the inherent joy and dignity that comes from doing stuff that you like.
Well, Kathy, you've been a wonderful guest here on Staff Notes, and as a longtime community member myself, I know folks really appreciate the effort you put in here on campus, but off campus as well, as just being a person who gets involved and wants to make a positive difference here in the community. So thanks for being on.
Do me a favor and ask people to call me if they want to run for office. I'll help them figure it out.
All right. How would they reach you?
They could call me at home, 273-8169, or I have a Cornell email. It's KLH7.
KLH7.
It's okay to use my email for that, isn't it?
You bet.
Oh, goody. Thanks,
Don't
Gary.
Don't take my word for it.
That's all right. Gary said it's true, so it must be.
Our guest today has been Kathy Luz Herrera. We've been taping here at the Electric Shop at the Humphrey Service Building. My name is Gary Stewart. Thanks for watching Staff Notes.